Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This KL 2017 SEA Games special is brought to you by Massey.
BFM 89.9, good morning, my name is Daryl Ong and this is Bar None, your weekly sports program, bringing you up to date with the ins and outs of the sporting world. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been featuring our national athletes and icons in conjunction with the ongoing KL 17 SEA Games. Something a little bit different this week as we explore the psychology of sports, and in particular, sound and music's ability to subconsciously enhance an athlete's performance. Could this be our secret weapon behind this year's KL 17 SEA Games? Music and sport used to be two very separate entities, with crossovers becoming extremely rare. These days, music, and especially rap music, are becoming more integrated in the realm of the sporting world. But why and how does music and sound make the body perform harder and last longer? Inspirational lyrics aside, how exactly does the body react to music, which some academics have termed a legal performance-enhancing drug? We explore that in today's episode, going through the scientific explanations and also the best ways sound and beats can help the body perform harder, better, faster, and stronger. But before that, our very own Dying No Faiza, who opened the KL 17 SEA Games with a brilliant performance of Bangkit Bersama, written by the legendary Datuk Ramli MS. It's one of the three official team songs for the Games, and we're privileged to have her on as she tells us about their love song to the country.
This is once in a lifetime experience, and they are so much very honored and humbled, and they are so really, really nervous on that day. But I just want to do the best on that night last. So hopefully, semuanya okay. Sports and music memang can bring people together. Through music, through sport, macam because of the emotion in everyday life, kan orang pun go through the same emotion macam in sport, macam tu everyday we struggle, we strive to macam to live everyday, macam to struggle everyday apa kita buat kan. So for sport pun sama, don't practice apa semua kan. So hopefully bila benda tu gel dan kita go through the same emotions everyday, so there so orang akan boleh relate dengan lagu tu untuk sport. Just like macam responsibility for me, bukan just not as a singer but as a rakyat Malaysia to do this for my country, because there is a I just want to do the best for this song. So you kan rasa macam dia cakap tadi, the emotion kan. So automatically macam bila in the studio you akan buat yang macam you rasa you nak deliver the song the best as you can. Sebab you rasa you bawa rakyat Malaysia punya apa semangat dalam lagu ni. Very different dengan any other performance yang dia pernah buat sebelum ni. Sebab sebelum ni lagu-lagu cinta, but this time around it's about macam bangkit bersama dengan rakyat Malaysia macam tu. So it's very different. Delivery pun different. Kalau love song macam dia macam lain sikit kan, but this time around dia macam every word, every line, every emotion tu kena clear macam tu. So orang kena rasa semangat yang dia cuba sampaikan dalam lagu ni macam tu. Very very different from Dayang punya lagu-lagu sebelum ni.
Dayang Nor Faiza and Bangkit Bersama, one of the official KL17 SEA Games anthems. Up next, we explore the world of music in sports with Professor Peter Terry, a professor of psychology, the director of research, training and development at the University of Southern Queensland, and over the last 30 years provided psychological support to over 1,000 athletes, including some Olympic medalists.
My work with Olympic athletes goes back to 1992. That was my first Olympics, the Winter Olympics in 92. And since then, I've done 6 summer and 3 Winter Olympics. I have also actually worked with the Malaysian contingent at a couple of Southeast Asian Games. I know Malaysia is hosting the SEA Games. I understand why this is very topical. Look, the work I do with athletes is very wide-ranging. A lot of it is to do with getting into the right performance mindset in order to get the best out of yourself on the big day. But sometimes there's things going on in people's personal lives that get in the way of that. So when I talk with athletes, I never know what's going to come up, whether it's going to be something directly related to the race or something in going on in their life that is bothering them. So you deal with whatever comes your way.
So it's very situational in a way.
Yeah, very much so. In individual sports, often it's about making sure that you get the right race plan, that you've cleared your mind of other things that could distract you, that you're really that you visualized the way you want it to go, and sometimes music can play a role in that, of course.
Definitely.
And then with the team, it gets a little more complicated because you're not only dealing with the individual mindset, but the group dynamics and the role of the coach, of course, and all the support staff that goes with it. So the team dynamics are very complicated and not that easy to control fully. So you're always trying to get the best out of individuals, the best out of them working with one another. On the day, often the best person does win, but not always. And this is the thing that's infinitely challenging about it. For Malaysian athletes in the SEA Games, there's obviously, the home advantage, there's all that support. But on the other side of the coin, there is additional pressure that comes about through interest from the media and the public that isn't always there. And so that sometimes sets off a chain of events in the thought processes that can act as a kind of a distraction. And I know a lot of the work that's been done with the podium program in Malaysia has been to give the athletes the very best of world-class support across all of the sports science disciplines and coaching and high performance elements of their preparation. So I think at the very least they'll go into these games very well prepared.
Great stuff. You mentioned you worked all around the world. Can you just give us, before we get into the meat of it, music and sport, can you just give us a background on how is it like working in outside of the world as well as in Europe and in US? Are there any major differences?
Okay, I think I'm originally from the UK, and most of the work I did with Olympic athletes was done there. I actually lived in Canada before and worked at the World University Games with some of their athletes. I've been in Australia now for 17 years and have been to the Commonwealth Games and the Olympics with the Australian team. And of course, yes, around Asia, I've worked with Malaysia, with Singapore, with India. It's a little bit in Indonesia. So I suppose I have got a good overview of the different sort of mindsets that you get. I think if I had to generalize, I'd say that when it comes to the Olympics, Malaysian mentality is starting to emerge as a true belief that they can compete and they can win. I think it's easier for American athletes to think that way. It's easy for a lot of Europeans. But Malaysia has been a small player in the world of elite sport. But some of the success that's come through, particularly in Rio with the, you know, with the three silver medals, yeah. I think Malaysia is starting to believe. Now, when it comes to the SEA Games, Malaysia does believe. There is sometimes not such an understanding of how easy it is for things not to go according to plan. I think there's the simplicity of attitude occasionally that, of course, you know, that's a good athlete. They've got the talent. They've had the support. Of course, they will win. But it doesn't work quite that simply. So I think there's a lot of black and white thinking going on, right, in Malaysia, whereas the subtleties of things are not always well understood. That occurs elsewhere, but if I had to characterise Malaysian attitudes towards sport and public expectations, that's what I'd say about it.
You co-authored a book called Inside Sport Psychology, where you devote a whole chapter actually to the power of sound. It was even mentioned that sound is a legal performance-enhancing drug. I found that term very amusing, and it's kind of true in a way. Professor, can you just tell us a bit about the positive effects of music and sound when it comes to enhancing an athlete's performance?
Yeah, look, we use that term because music has been shown in many laboratory studies and field studies to be performance enhanced. Of course, you know, it's not a drug, but it has powerful effects. Okay, the effects that it has can really be broken down into four categories. The first is that music can manipulate our mood and our emotions. And I think everybody understands that. It can make you sad, it can make you happy. But if you get a little more subtle about it, it can make you more aggressive, it can make you calmer, it can make you more determined. So sometimes the music really lifts certain emotions that are very useful in a sports context. And that's a pretty reliable benefit. But of course, you have to choose the right music for the right person to get the right effect. Right. So I can't just say play this music and you're going to be in absolutely the right mindset. Linked to that is that music does reduce our perceived exertion. So when you're working hard, part of the limitations on you, let's say you're running a marathon, part of them are physiological, but there's a large psychological component that you don't feel as though you can, you know, keep this pace up or go any faster. And so that is about the perceived exertion rather than the objective exertion. And so music can play a role there to lower the perceived exertion and thereby help people get a little more out of themselves. So the third benefit is in performance terms. I mean, we've done a number of experiments where we've run people to exhaustion on a treadmill, and some of these have been world champions. And we found that doing the same amount of work at a steady state and then running to exhaustion, their performance is better when they're running in time to the music than when there's no music. And in fact, you know, some of the benefits are in the sort of 15 to 20% longer that they will go on a treadmill. So, you know, these are not just minute differences, they're important benefits. The final one, and this is probably the most intriguing, is that it's not just a psychological phenomenon. We have demonstrated that if you do the same amount of work, so you're running on a treadmill at the same pace for the same length of time, the oxygen consumption can be lowered by about 1 to 2%. Running in time with the music. And the explanations for this, they're many and varied, but two of the more simpler ones are that you get this generalized relaxation response, enhances blood flow efficiency and therefore oxygen utilization. And also, because you're running in time to something, almost a metronome effect, means that there are fewer micro adjustments to running patterns. So that's a biomechanical explanation. So you just become a little bit more efficient in your running pattern. So these are some of the things that have been shown, the benefits of music. At the end of the day, you still have to find the right music for the right situation that suits the person. But the first study, by the way, on this was published in 1911, which showed that these were 5-day cycle events in New York, and just showed that when the band was playing, the lead cyclist went faster. It was an interesting observational study. Yeah. Of course, we got a little more sophisticated since then, but certainly don't yet have all the answers.
So there is an amount of science applied to it. But it does sound simple, right, Professor? Like, when you listen to music, it enhances your performance, makes you run longer, makes you cycle longer. I don't know, it just seems a bit simple.
It's not complicated in principle. And in fact, you know, you watch almost every athlete these days prior to performance, they're mostly listening to music. Now, some of it is to distract them from the nervous energy they might use thinking about the performance. Some of it is to change their mood, put them in the right frame of mind. But I think that the benefits are not fully exploited. The principles are simple. Getting the maximum return on your music efforts still is fairly complicated and a lot of trial and error. And thinking of ways, you know, I talk in the book about, you know, a boxer, Olympic champion before his final bout, you'd have thought he might want to make himself more aggressive, but he was listening to Japanese classical music to make himself calmer, more precise. It was light. So he was planning to outbox rather than outfight his opponent. So chose music that really made his hands move quicker, his mind move a bit quicker, but he stayed calm in the process. So I think that there is a degree of sophistication in it.
Yeah, I mean, for like boxing, right? You listen to music to kind of pre-amp yourself, but say for like you're doing jogging, you're running a marathon, would you say that music kind of serves as a distraction to the fatigue and pain?
There is certainly an element of that. Certainly at the low to moderate intensity range, yes, you could say that the music distracts you from the symptoms of fatigue. When you get to really high intensity work, that the symptoms of fatigue, its pain actually, would overwhelm the effect of the music. You might still get some benefit, but the benefit would be reduced because you know, the music can't mask the lactic acid buildup and so on. So I think it is, again, there's moments in a race where it would be extremely beneficial, and there are other times when it may serve no useful purpose. And of course, for the most part, you can't actually listen to music during a competition.
Yeah.
You can sing to yourself, of course.
Would that work as well?
Yes, I'd say it. You probably lose a little bit of the effect, but no, I think triathletes are an interesting example. When they come off the bike and get onto the run, often they set off too quickly, and so you might use music to actually slow yourself down a little bit to get into a nice steady state, but not too intense pace. So yeah, I think you have to be creative in the way you use it. Singing to yourself works pretty well. Shooters that I've worked with, in between the shots, they like to have a little holiday, as we talk about it. They take their mind off the occasion and come back in just prior to the next shot. And sometimes they'll sing to themselves. Doesn't matter what they're doing. It just stops the thinking process sometimes, which is often the challenge.
You mentioned in your research asynchronized and synchronized music. Yeah. Can you just elaborate a bit on these terms?
Yeah, well, synchronized is essentially where you're moving in time to the music. So if you're running, you need to choose music that has the right tempo.
Right.
And if you're running fast, actually, if you're running fast, you have to choose slower music and do two strides to the beat, because there isn't very little music at that very high tempo, you know, above 160 beats per minute, which is often the stride rate of somebody at the elite level. You would choose music that has the asynchronous is really where it's background music and you're not synchronizing the music to the movement.
So that's bad. That wouldn't work psychologically.
No, actually, interestingly enough, it does. Yes, we've had the hypothesis for some time that it wouldn't work nearly as well. But our recent research suggests that it works nearly as well as synchronous music. So that's a good thing. That means you can get benefits from most types of music, even if you don't like it, in performance terms, at least. So I think that you might choose things there that have lyrics that support what you're trying to do. So, you know, keep on running, for example, jump. Some of these, you know, songs that have very positive affirmations related to your activity would come in the lyrics. Sometimes it is about preference, you know, music that has associations of very positive things that have happened to you in the past may have a particular benefit over and above what's inherent in the music itself.
I mean, what comes to mind now is Eye of a Tiger. I mean, that is the classic kind of spot song, right?
But it's amazing how many people, if you ask them, you know, what sort of music would put you in the right frame of mind, a lot of people still choose that.
Yeah. Professor, you've been working on this with a team somewhat for a long time. What are some of the things you found during your research that, you know, personally surprised you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, we have been working on it for a long time. I think about 25 years, and my colleagues back in London work on it on a daily basis. What surprised us? Well, I've spoken to Olympic medalists, you know, Olympic champions, and some of them, when it comes down to it, you talk about music, they really give so much credit to the choice of music as a contributor to their success. It's not just a little add-on on the side. They felt it was, when it came down to the day, it was really fundamental. And I can think of one who said he changed music. He used to listen to house music, garage music, and he said that it made him too hyped up, and right, he couldn't stay relaxed listening to that. And he said when he changed it to gospel music, he's quite religious, and he found that the affirmations in that you're not alone out there, you know, you look up to the heavens and God's there to support you. He said that really was the last piece of the jigsaw puzzle that then enabled him to win Olympic gold. So that has surprised me just how fundamental it is to a lot of people.
I mean, that is surprising. When thinking about this, I would feel that if you listen to a song that you're familiar with, a genre that you're always into, your body will kind of react positively to that. But say if you're someone like me and I'm not a classical guy at all, I listen to classical while I'm running, I don't know if that would work.
You've raised a number of interesting points there. Yeah. So I think that, you know, if you really love a particular genre and it relaxes you and puts you in a good frame of mind, then, as you say, it just playing that, it doesn't matter what the particular song is necessarily, it's going to happen relatively automatically that you're going to get the right mindset. And then you ask, does classical music work? Well, the simple answer is yes, it can. But if you hate classical music, it's probably not the best choice. Right. So a lot of it is about your body being trained to respond automatically to a particular set of songs or particular genre. That may take some time. You're trying to build up an association. It's almost like classical conditioning. It's like Pavlov's dogs, that between this particular piece of music or type of music and successful outcome. And that can be done over time in training, using trial and error during competition, in lower level competitions, one that you could replay something successful in the past at a big competition. All of these things, just add that little bit to your preparation, because in the SEA Games, often the difference between winning and losing is pretty small. And anything, if music can bridge that gap, then why not?
One thing I came across that I found really amazing and surprising even is that women were found to benefit more from men from the effects of music.
There's some studies that have shown that.
Do you agree with that?
Just going to explain, often those ones have been done in an exercise context, and often more females generally do exercise to music than males, so there may be that there's a habituation effect there. I don't think there's anything hardwired about men and women that would predispose them to getting more benefits from music over the other. So I wouldn't make too much of that. I would say the individual differences between people, some people are very reactive to music, others are not. Those individual differences would be far greater than gender differences.
Last couple of questions, Professor. In 2007, the US track and field, they actually banned the use of headphones and portable audio players at official races. They banned it to ensure safety and to prevent runners from having that competitive edge. Do you agree that, you know, doing it recreationally, running a marathon, that music does give an unfair advantage?
I don't think it's unfair because it's available to all.
Yeah.
Yes, they did ban it from the New York Marathon on the grounds of safety. I believe that they were actually, they didn't want to have to open up that can of worms about the performance enhancing quality of it. So other sports have done that. Some sports it is permissible. So, but as I've said, even if you can't listen on portable devices, you've always got that, you know, that music player in your head to utilize.
And the instrument, which is your mouth.
Exactly.
Professor, do you have any tips for anyone listening to this now? They really want to, you know, inject music into their exercise regime. You know, what's the best way to start?
Well, I think I'd say the best way to start is to think about the tempo of what you're doing and try and find songs. You know, it's not hard these days to get on and use one of the online sort of DJ things. You can get the tempo of the music pretty easily. So try to choose something of the same tempo, and so something a bit slower for the warm-up. You know, when you get into the main phase of your exercise, you know, you want it to be going pretty fast, pretty loud, and then a warm down at the end. Just see how you go and experiment with different playlists. I think that there's no doubt there are potential benefits there. They're not guaranteed, but for anyone who's exercising, you know, it can get monotonous. It can get uncomfortable. I think the music can certainly, it's certainly worth having a go to see if the music helps.
That was Professor Terry, who's provided psychological support to over 1,000 athletes, including some Olympic medalists, and we've been exploring the connection of music and sport and how it can enhance sporting performance. If you'd like to revisit the interview, you can head over to our website www.bfm.my. You can download the podcast from there. Also, let us know what you think of the show. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, and don't forget to download our latest app via Google Play and the App Store. That brings us to the end of this week's show. This has been Banan, your weekly sports program, bringing you up to date with the ins and outs of the sporting world. My name's Daryl Ong. Do join us again next week, same time, right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Rise together at the KL 2017 SEA Games with Masing. Reinvent spaces, enhance life.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or black forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.